This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program.
This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio Indy. I'm Kent Blanford. In studio with me, Bridget Eyre.
Yeah, and I got a fresh, crisp mask on, so yep. I don't spread anything.
We're working on the social distancing and everything else that goes along with life today. And our guest today is Dr. Joseph White.
Yes, and we have a lot of Catholic parents in our listening audience, and I think this topic will really interest you today. I know it's going to interest me because I need all the help I can get. And the topic today is raising joyful children, and as Kent said, joining us is our guest, Dr. Joseph White. He's a child and family psychologist and also the director of catechetical materials at Our Sunday Visitors. So welcome to Faith in Action, Dr. Joseph.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Well, I actually thought maybe that you were based in Fort Wayne, where OSV is, but as it turns out, you told us that you're actually in Austin. So give us a little bit about your background and maybe how you decided to become a child and family psychologist.
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, I work for OSV Publishing, and I work for them full-time, and they're based in Indiana, but I am actually in the Austin, Texas area. My wife is a DRE here in the area at a parish of about 7,000 families, so a little tiny parish here in Texas. And I am I'm a convert to the Catholic faith. I came into the church in graduate school. I was already studying clinical child psychology. In fact, I probably started studying clinical child psychology as a teenager because I'm the oldest of five kids.
Oh, okay.
That's survival technique.
I did a little reading on child behavior even back then because I was just trying to get by.
I hear you.
But I was already in graduate school when I came into the Catholic Church, and I remember telling the director of my RCIA that, wow, I wish I would have become Catholic before I went to graduate school because maybe I would have wanted to do something in catechesis or religious education. And she said, well, you never know what God has in mind, you know. But I have found child and family psychology to be very conducive to work in catechesis and religious education because we focus so much on the family and parents as primary catechists and also how to get the message across to our children in a way that they can really hear and understand. And that's it's a big part of the work that I do at OSV is bringing in that developmental component and helping us as a company wrap our heads around how do we deliver good, solid Catholic teaching in a developmentally appropriate way.
I'm really curious. I did not know before we got started here that you were a convert. How did you happen to come into the Catholic faith? As soon as someone tells me they're a convert, I got to ask.
Well, yeah, as many young adults are, I was searching. I had grown up in a Protestant evangelical denomination called Church of Christ. Some of your listeners may be familiar with Churches of Christ. Similar to Baptist, although I don't think we would have said that when I was in the Church of Christ, but very similar in terms of doctrine and practice. I just had a lot of questions and didn't find that completely satisfying. And, you know, one of the questions was, how do we know that we're the church that Jesus started? How can we be sure about how we interpret the Bible? These are questions that are answered well by our Catholic understanding of the magisterium and sacred tradition, but they weren't answered well for me in the Church of Christ. And so I was searching. It just so happens my graduate school that I went to, Virginia Commonwealth University, grew up around the cathedral of the Diocese of Richmond. The cathedral was there first. People wondered why they built the cathedral out in the country, and now it's in the center of downtown Richmond. Over time, the university grew up around it, so I passed that cathedral every day, and I always felt drawn in. And one day, I actually went in. And the first time I went to Mass, I felt it was hard for me to explain or put my finger on, but I just had this overwhelming sense that God was present there. I didn't know anything about our Catholic understanding of the real presence of the Eucharist at that time. But I had this overwhelming feeling that God was present and I wanted to know more. And the rest is history.
Yeah, that's a great story. I've heard other people share similar stories where they just felt drawn, and when they walked into the church, they just couldn't explain. They just really felt the presence of God. So that's really awesome. Thanks for sharing that story. Were you going to ask something, Ken?
Well, I do have one question, because we've used the letters OSV several times now. What does OSV stand for?
Well, OSV stands for Our Sunday Visitor.
Okay.
Which was originally, and some of your listeners are probably familiar because it still is a paper, but it was originally started as a periodical by the man who became Bishop Knoll, was a priest at the time, Father Knoll. And Father Knoll was trying to defend the faith 100 years ago in an era of great persecution for Catholics in Indiana, was trying to help Catholics defend their faith and also promote understanding among non-Catholics of what we really believe. And that paper has been in existence ever since the founding, but the company has grown to many other things, like offertory solutions and books and other periodicals and curriculum. And we've shortened our name because Our Sunday Visitor was the paper that visited many parishes on Sundays, but doesn't mean quite as much to people at first glance anymore, and it's easier to say OSV than Our Sunday Visitor. So
I just wanted to toss that out for, you know, people. OSV, is that a religious order? Is that what? So I wanted to make clear what we're talking about when we say OSV.
Well, we're talking with Dr. Joseph White, and we're going to get to our topic here, which is raising joyful children. And I know a lot of our listeners want to have some tips on that. And I guess the question I have for you, is there a magic formula for raising joyful children?
Well, I wouldn't say there's a magic formula, but we do certainly have some guidance from both the research and from our understanding of who we are called to be as family in our Catholic tradition. And the great news is that all of those things seem to kind of point to the same things, even the social science research. And I think that's generally true, because the more we find out about the human person, we know God created the human person. So the more we find out about how we think and how we grow and how we relate to one another, the more we really see God's plan revealed both in science and in our faith.
And you know what I think is really interesting is that we've had a bunch of interviews coming up in the past, I guess, several weeks about evangelization. And I just see this whole new paradigm shift, and it's related to the domestic church as well, but that it's not really, our faith isn't about, it's not really a religion, it's a relationship. And that is so relevant as it relates to raising joyful children, that the emphasis should be on the relationship. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. You know, really, people search all their lives, all around the world, all through time, for the secret to happiness. And we've got that. The secret to happiness is in right relationship. It's in right relationship with God and in right relationship with one another.
Well, now there's several points that I know that you wanted to get to. I do have to ask you a question. Is there a difference between, you know, when we're talking about raising joyful children, are we talking about, is there an age limit, you know, to that? Do you deal with teens? No, you know what I'm saying? Is it different for, you know, K through 8 versus, you know, teenagers versus adult children? Because, you know, we've got parents in the audience that have adult children now. And I'm sure it's different, but as we talk about these tips, is it applicable to everyone, or is it different for different ages?
I think in the most general sense, they're applicable to everyone, but I think there's, we always want to be conscious of developmental appropriateness. So one of the things I'm going to recommend, for example, is playing together. The way that you play together with young kids might be different than the way you play together with teens or with young adults.
And why is play important or integral to having that, having joyful children?
You know, play is one of those things that builds relationships. It helps us grow in a fun way. And we're wired for play. In every culture, we see kids play. It's one of the ways that kids try out new ideas and explore their creative sides. It's one of the things that develops the prefrontal cortex of the brain, which is the part of the brain that's responsible for impulse control and planning and things like that. But the way that we play together is important, and that changes over time. When we play with young kids, it's very important that we allow the use of imagination, that we help them engage in their own problem solving, that we affirm some of the things that they're choosing and wanting to do together. And so I recommend for parents of young kids to get down on the floor with them and just begin just by narrating what kids are doing. Oh, I see that she's going into the dollhouse. What is she doing? You know, the family's gathering around the table. They're going to eat dinner now, aren't they? And just kind of narrating that as the child plays, and then the child will involve you in that play. But it's really one of those ways that we build relationship in kind of in the downtime, in the more relaxed kind of setting.
And I guess it's important to be able to have some of that downtime. You know, I mean, you really have right. to, you really actually have to almost plan downtime. You know what I mean? So let's talk about practicing gratitude. Why is that important, and how do we do that?
You know, in every situation, including challenging times like many are facing right now with the restrictions because of the pandemic and some of the stresses and limits that go along with that, in every situation, there are things that are frustrating for us and also things that we can be grateful for. And one of the reasons I think why we're commanded to thank God so many times throughout Scripture, to give Him thanks, it's not because God needs our thanks. He doesn't need our thanks. It's because we need to thank God. We need to take time to appreciate the good things, the blessings that He's given us, and to feel happy and grateful for that. And so practicing gratitude as a family, I think, becomes very important as we, you know, share the good things that have happened in our day, as we talk about the blessings that we have. One of the activities I recommend for families is when you gather for family meals, which I also think is very, very important as well, gathering around a table for a meal, take turns going around the table and say, you know, name one good thing that happened today, or one thing that you're grateful for, one blessing that God has given you. As we begin to focus on those good things, it changes our perspective of you know, the kind of the weight that we give in life to the positives versus the negatives.
That's such a great point. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to give you some more tips on how to raise joyful children. So stay tuned for more Faith in Action.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Alexa, what's the weather forecast for today?
Alexa, what time is the Colts game today?
Alexa, remind me to pick up the dry cleaning tomorrow.
Has Alexa become a part of your daily routine? Then make sure that routine includes Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Quick, easy access to Catholic programming 24/7. Just say, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
This station has been an inspiration.
Those moments of the Lord, it's always make my day better.
Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Eyre. Kent Blanford and I are in the studio together, and we are talking with our guest, Dr. Joseph White. He is a child and family psychologist, and he's also the director of catechetical materials at Our Sunday Visitor, and he is based in Austin, Texas. And we're talking about raising joyful children, and we talked about the importance of playing together and practicing gratitude. And now we're going to talk about working together or working together. So talk about the importance of that. Why is it important to work together?
Well, of course, in every home, there's lots of work to be done.
That's true.
And we want to raise kids that know how to do things, that don't have everything done for them. But the way that we work together and get that work accomplished in the home can help us build relationships, too, because shared work helps people build relationships. That's why we have good friends at work. And so, you know, what I would recommend very strongly is working together in the sense that not just divide and conquer, but team up on tasks. Do the dishes together. Have somebody wash and somebody rinse and somebody dry, or have somebody put away the dishes. Do things together so that you can talk during that time and work alongside one another. I think that's so important. Some things that kids can't do for themselves when they're still too young, even, you know, a toddler's and twos and it's time to pick up all the toys in the room. I know it's faster just to swoop in there and pick it up all on your own. But if we engage them in doing that with us and say, okay, now put that one in this box, it takes a little more time, but it's relationship building, and we're also building that skill to get those things done and be more responsible as well.
Yeah, and maybe even demonstrating how you should put the toys together or back together in the certain box, not like over behind the couch or something.
Right.
Like that.
Exactly.
Not that I've experienced that or anything like that. So
they find all kinds of places to hide them, don't they?
There's no doubt about that. Well, let's talk about serving together as a family. Why is that important? And what does that mean exactly?
Well, we're called to go outside of ourselves and to give to others. And the family, as domestic church, is called not to be just an insular community, but to that love that we have together as a family should overflow and should flow out into the communities around us. And so doing things together as a family is another way to draw closer together while still fulfilling our mission as a family in the world. And that might mean working together at the parish. I know a family at our parish that one of their ways of serving together is at the end of Mass, they collect all the worship aids that people have left in the pews, and they straighten up all of the missals and things and the hymnals, and they do all of that together. So it might mean that. It might mean serving out in the community, going around the neighborhood and picking up trash or volunteering with a community organization. It's a great witness of who we are as Catholic families to go out into the community and serve in that way as well.
Well, those are some good ideas, you know, and I think I love when I see families doing things like that together, because it seems like they are really having fun, and it really just, I guess, communicates the mission of what we're supposed to be doing, not just together as a family, but as Catholics, you know, reaching out to other people.
Yeah, and Bridget, almost every study that we do of what makes somebody happy in the social sciences, this is on the list. We are happier when we give of ourselves, because God has wired us that way. He's wired us with a mission, with a call to give of ourselves, and we're only going to be truly happy when we're doing what we're made to do.
That's so true. Create family rituals. Talk about what's a family ritual and how do you go about creating them?
Well, you know, when you look at sociological research of what draws a group of people together, you'll always find in those studies this element of ritual, that when we have things that we do together on a regular basis, and of course, as Catholic families, the most important one of those family rituals is praying together, is gathering together for prayer. Unfortunately, though, studies tell us that only about 17% of Catholic families say that they pray together on a regular basis. You know, there are many ways to pray together. Gather as a family, say a quick prayer that's a traditional prayer, or gather together as a family and say, okay, we're just going to go around the circle and say one thing we want to say to God today. There are many different ways to do that, but taking that time to gather together in prayer is important. Family meals would be the second most important family ritual. Gathering around a table together and sharing a meal together. There was a great study that was done just about 2 years ago that showed how people are much more likely to agree when they share a meal together. And also the benefits of having family meals on children's development has been well documented. Columbia University does a study every few years looking at the difference between kids that eat meals together regularly with their family and kids who don't. And what they've found over and over again is that those kids that share a regular meal, which they define as five or more times a week, have lower rates of substance abuse, better family communication, higher self-esteem, higher grades, and the list goes on and on and on. So those are two most important rituals. Other things have to do with how we celebrate special occasions, birthdays, even everyday rituals. How do we navigate bedtime at the end of the night? How do we say goodnight to each other? How do we say goodbye when we leave for things? Those kinds of things.
And I want to, I didn't talk about this question in advance, but I want to throw this out there with regard to rituals and COVID. It seems like in some ways COVID has kind of maybe helped improve some family rituals or maybe allowed people to develop them, but then it also may have upset people's apple cart too, you know?
So, sure, Our routines have changed quite a bit, and it's always important, especially when something causes some upheaval like that in a kind of a stressful or traumatic way, that we try to keep as much consistent as we can. So, you know, those things that we can still keep consistent, like gathering for meals or going to bed at the same time, it's important to do that.
Now, I'm a fan of Dr. Greg and Lisa Popchak, and I actually heard you on their show recently, the Mortal Life show, and that's why I wanted to have you on our show. But I'm reading a book that they put together called Discovering God Together, and you have a lot of similar, I guess, ideas about raising joyful children. I'm wondering if you were both drawing on the same research, if you're friends or, you know, collaborating. Just
well,
curious.
All of the above. Mm-hmm. We are good friends and we collaborate on various things, but we also are drawing on some of the same research in the social sciences, especially. Dr. Darsha Navarez's developmental research, some of the attachment and relationship work of Dr. Dan Siegel, Christian Smith and Justin Bartkus, and their work on how we raise faithful kids that keep the faith. Which I know is a big question and issue right now in our church as we see tragically more and more of our young people dropping out of the church. One of the things that we see featured prominently both in the homilies and apostolic exhortations of Pope Francis, as well as in the new directory for catechesis, our guide from the church about how to hand on the faith, is this idea that we should be drawing from the social science research as well so that we can make our message and our mission more effective. Because the more we learn about how kids grow and how people think and how families function, and the more we apply that to what we do as Catholic families and how we teach our children, the more effective we can be. And so I think Dr. Greg and Lisa and I all try to integrate that work together and say, how does this speak to the most effective way to do what we do as Catholics?
Well, you've done a really great service in really putting all that together and unpacking that for us as Catholics so that we can just kind of take that and run with it, you know, in our domestic church. So, and it seems so simple and so obvious, but, you know, it's just helpful to have a plan like that laid out. And these are all simple things, you know, play together, practice gratitude, work together, serve together, you know, create family rituals. You speak around the country, and I was kind of looking at your schedule. I don't know if you're going anywhere these days with COVID or what you're doing with that. What are the topics that you talk about? I mean, or can you talk about any topic, I guess, or what's in your wheelhouse?
Well, I do a lot of, as you might imagine, a lot of talks for catechists and catechetical leaders because of my work at OSV in catechesis. I do some talks for parents as well on occasion. Sometimes in the same cities, you know, I'll do one talk for parents and one talk for catechists or catechetical leaders. Parents are the primary catechists too, of course, so parents are always catechists as well. I'm not doing any live talks right now because of the COVID situation and some of the restrictions on travel, but I'm doing a lot of virtual talks right now, so I do get around the country quite a bit, either virtually or in person.
Now, you also have a lot of books, too, that you've authored. Give us a couple of those titles of your books and maybe some resources that our listeners can get their hands on if they want to kind of delve into this a little bit more.
Well, my latest book is called Listening for God in Everyday Life, and that book is really focused on what are all the different places just in our ordinary everyday lives where God speaks to us, including through family and relationship, and how do we draw on that more? I've also done a book called The Catholic Parents Toolbox that really, again, takes a lot of this research and puts it into how would we kind of do that with our children in an everyday kind of way? Your listeners may be familiar, if they're familiar with my name at all, with some little booklets that my wife and I wrote together called Catholic Parent Know-How. We did one for First Communion, First Reconciliation, as well as some other topics. But a lot of folks get those when their kids are going through First Communion.
Well, those are all such great topics, and I'm just wondering, and maybe you can mention, we only got about a minute left, some of these ideas of raising joyful children, does that also translate into passing on the faith? And again, we've got about 1 minute, and I want to make sure we get your webpage at the end, too.
Yeah, one thing that I say a lot, and I've heard Dr. Greg and Lisa say this a lot, too, kids will continue to practice the faith when they experience the faith as a real source of joy in their family life and in their homes. When the faith really animates our daily life, then they see it as relevant to their daily life. So yes, I think doing these things that help us raise joyful children also help us raise faithful children.
And I think also making those connections too, helping
right.
them make those connections that it is relevant, in our life. Give us your webpage, Dr. Joseph White.
My webpage is at sharingcatholicfaith.com, and my books and resources are available at osvcatholicbookstore.com.
Dr. Joseph White, child and family psychologist, thanks so much for being our guest today. God bless you.
You too.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again or any past episode at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.